Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 139. I'm recording it on Monday, June 1st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of this selection is so terrific. The title of the podcast is Only Valuations Matter. Everything else is priced in. I worry. We all have our little worries. And the biggest worry I have recording these podcasts is the material that I present at the PassionSaving.com website, especially on investing, it's just bland. You know, it's just sort of the same old thing, you know, you've heard it a million times before. You know, passive investing doesn't work. You gotta change your stock allocation in response to big price changes, all that sort of thing. And, you know, you've heard this in the magazines and other websites everywhere you go. And, what, you know, why listen to Rob Bennett? It's the same old thing, same old thing. How do I get people to listen if I don't say anything a little bit different? So every now and then, I will try to just take that, you know, standard investing advice that I believe in going with. You know, I believe in that stuff and maybe jazz it up a little bit, make it sound a little interesting, you know. So I thought, well, everybody agrees valuations matter. Everybody agrees that passive investing can't possibly work. So maybe the thing to do is to try to, you know, take the conventional wisdom and take it just a little bit farther. Instead of just saying valuations matter, what if I were to say only valuations matter? That would be a little different. That would be a little jazzed. That would be a little controversial, maybe. So I set myself a little project to argue not just that valuations matter, which pretty much, I think it'd be fair to say, pretty much everyone agrees, but to not just that you need to change your stock allocation in response to big price changes, but that only valuations matter. Whoa, they don't all say that, do they? Now Rob's saying something a little different. So the argument in this podcast is that only valuations matter. Everything else is priced in. And I don't know. Do I mean that literally? Only valuations matter? There's a sense in which I do, and there's a sense in which I don't. I don't believe that valuations are the only thing that affect your investing strategy or that affect stock prices. The way I usually say it is that valuations are, of course, emotions. When you're talking about overvaluation or undervaluation, you're talking about emotion. If stock investing were rational, stocks would always be fairly priced, which would mean we would not have overvaluation or undervaluation. So the valuation story is 70% of the investing story. And so ordinarily, I would say valuations are 70%, not valuations are everything. But I do think it's fair to say that only valuations matter to the typical middle-class investor, because while other things affect the stock price and while other things affect investing success, those other things are generally things beyond the control and beyond the expertise of the typical middle-class investor. So when you're talking to the typical middle-class investor, which is the group that I direct my podcast at and my articles at, I think it is fair in that circumstance to say only valuations matter, because the rest of it is pretty much beyond us. There's not really much we can do about all the other things that affect stock prices, but valuations is something we need to take into consideration and something we can take into consideration. It's something that's easy enough to understand that we can act on it, and we must act on it because it is so important. So the argument in this podcast is that for practical purposes, perhaps not in a literal sense, but for practical purposes, only valuations matter. And the reason only valuations matter is because all the other things that matter are priced in. All the other things that matter are priced in. Now, I'll start with a little story. Going back to my youth, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, I worked at a place called Daily Tax Report. It was a newsletter. Had a lot of fun times there. I did a lot of different jobs for Daily Tax Report. I used to write up these letter rulings from IRS. And that will drive a person insane because all the every job has its weird elements, but the weird element of this one is the letter rulings were released under the Freedom of Information Act and people wanted to know what was in them. But the IRS, there was somebody whose job at IRS was to black out all of the details so that you couldn't figure out who did the ruling. So I'd have to summarize what the ruling said, but half the time, all the facts you needed to tell to make sense of it were blacked out. So it would say, you know, X, a company that, and then it would all be black, you know, and then bought a, and then it would all be black, and then it would say at a price of, and then it would all be black. And you're like, how am I supposed to summarize this? There's some company somewhere that bought something at some price, you know, and then you're supposed to say what the tax result is. So it was a crazy sort of job. It was a Kafka-esque experience, that particular job. But I moved on from there before I lost my mind, and I covered IRS for several years, wrote about IRS developments, regulations, and so forth. And then I covered Capitol Hill. That was the most fun job. But something that always struck me funny about that job, it was the first job I had out of law school, and full-time job. You know, I had jobs in the summer and part-time jobs, but the first, you know, job I intended to stick at for a long time. And there were about nine of us there, and we all got to be friends because we didn't have separate offices. We all worked in a bullpen, so we all talked to each other every day, whether we liked it or not. We could hear everybody else's conversations and got to be friends. And different, all the people that you can make a movie about it, you know, like The Big Chill or something. We all sort of moved on to different things. But it's very curious when you go back that we all sort of ended up where we belonged based on our skill sets, in my opinion. So I thought that was very funny. But there was a girl there, Melissa, and she covered budget. And she was very different than me. Her skill was she was very good at the news development, the breaking news. She would call people on the phone and she'd find out what was going to happen and, you know, she'd get it out quick. And I was much more an analytical type. You know, I loved reporting, I loved writing articles, but I couldn't bear to write just the news peg. You know, I had to write what it meant. That's what it was all about to me. That's what journalism is all about to me. And she would call those thumb suckers. You know, I was a thumb sucker, in Melissa's opinion. Or my articles were thumb suckers. And anyway, she went on to a job. I think she was working for, like, Bloomberg, had some sort of news service. And people that were trading stocks would pay huge amounts of money for this service, you know, $10,000 a year or something. And her job was to go out to news events, but to find tradable information before it was in the newspapers. It was in the newspapers, it was way too late. But she would try to get it before it was even on the news wires, you know, before it was on Reuters or Dow Jones. And that's hard. And if she could get it, and then they would provide the information on their computers to the people who had this expensive service. And in theory, these people were getting information. It wasn't insider information. There was nothing illegal about it. But they were getting it quicker than it was publicly available. And they would try to trade to their benefit based on that. So something she would do is we would both get assigned, say, to cover Alan Greenspan. He'd be speaking to Congress. And you know, I'd be there and I'd be, you know, reading the speech and listening to the questions and all this sort of thing and, you know, trying to figure out the deeper meaning of Alan Greenspan's speech. And Melissa, it was truly comical, but she would have, she would come to the hearings with running shoes on and, you know, she'd wait and at some point Greenspan would say some significant phrase and sometimes it would be in the first sentence, you know, you know, good morning, you know, whatever the committee is. And he would say, The economic indicators are not looking good, and Melissa would go racing out of the room, you know, in her running shoes, and there'd be somebody else from the same company who would, in advance, would go into a phone booth and sort of, you know, just pretend to be talking on the phone so nobody else could use the phone booth. And Melissa would go running into the phone booth and, you know, call the story in. And so they'd get it first. So it was very strange, very, very strange, newfangled approach to reporting. But she was very good at it. Melissa was very good at that. And there was a real need for it. And it served a purpose, but it's the opposite of the purpose I try to serve. I've never been interested in getting the story first, ever. I hate it, really. I have no skill at it, don't like it, and just because I'm not interested in it. I believe in getting the story, getting the deeper meaning of the story. That's always been my focus. So the point here is, what got me started thinking about this podcast is, does the average middle-class investor need to know what Alan Greenspan said in his most recent speech? Do they need to know it in 10 minutes? Do they need to know it in 10 hours? Do they need to know it in 10 days, 10 weeks, 10 months? I say they don't need to know it at all. Now, the people who were paying $10,000 a year to get this information, they weren't fools. They were trying to get an edge. But they were not your typical middle-class investor. In other words, that information had value for some people. Usually what they were looking for from Greenspan is what he was going to do with interest rates. You know, if our interest rates going to go up or down, or how much they're going to go up or how much they're going to go down. And if you knew that information, you could trade and you could profit, or at least people think you can. And I think they're probably right. If you got that information before it was on Reuters and you were smart enough to understand which way stocks were going to move when that information appeared on Reuters, you could get in a trade very quickly. And then an hour later, when Reuters had the story, stocks would move in the direction you anticipated, and you would cash out at a nice profit. But that is information. So all of the model we use to understand how stock investing works is the passive investing model. Sadly, it's all based on that. It's all based on a belief that the news matters. Now, a lot of passive investors will deny that. A lot of passive investors will tell you, we don't care about the short-term developments, but it's not really true. They will argue that, but it's not really true. What we're really going through today, I believe, is passive investing is a transition model. The old model, the pre-Bogle model, was you could call it the short term timing model, the pre-Bogle model. In that model, everybody cared about these economic developments. Everybody cared about short-term changes, short-term economic changes. That's what the focus was. And the theory was, if you know what's going to happen to the economy, if interest rates are going up, or if unemployment is going up or down, or if inflation is going up or down, or if the recession is going to come to an end, all that sort of thing. If you knew that stuff, you could profit in stocks. And that was the game. And the stuff that's in the newspapers is still influenced by the belief that that's what matters. Today, that's still true. But there's a model that came into effect that on one level denies that that's what matters, and on another level accepts that that's what matters. That's the transition model. That's passive investing. Passive investing says that stuff doesn't matter. Oh, it's just noise. The Bogleheads will tell you what Greenspan says is noise. Don't pay any attention. And I agree. I think they're 100% right. I'll try to explain why. But the problem with the transition model is, why they say it's noise, they don't really believe that. Because the passive investing model is rooted intellectually in something called the efficient market theory. And the efficient market theory is an academic construct. And what the efficient market theory says is that you can't time the market. You can't beat the market. You can't time the market. But the reason that what the passive model gets wrong is the reason why you can't. The reason why they say you can't time the market, you can't beat the market, is that it is these news developments that cause market price changes. And you, as an individual investor, cannot possibly know better than the experts how these things are going to go. And so if you try to play that game of being smarter than the, you know, the big fund managers, you're going to lose. They're smarter than you. They've got more computers than you. They've got more research services available to them than you. And you're going to lose. That's passive investing. So don't try to beat it. Just pick a stock allocation and stay with it. That's passive investing. And I say that that's a transition model. And I say that where we are headed ultimately is what I call rational investing. Rational investing agrees with half of passive investing and rejects totally the other half. The part it agrees with is the idea that you don't need to pay attention to these economic developments, that they are indeed noise. And I'll try to explain why. But that there's one thing you must pay attention to, and that's valuations. And the problem with the passive investing model is the passive investing model says you don't need to worry about any of it. You don't need to worry about interest rates or inflation or unemployment or recessions. Just tune that all out and also tune out valuations. And what I argue is that you must take valuations into consideration, but that you quite properly ignore all that other stuff. So over time, what's happening is our understanding of stock investing is improving, evolving, and it started out at a very juvenile level, where all you try to do is sort of guess where the market's headed in the next 6 months. We're headed ultimately to what you might call a sophisticated model, though I'm not sure exactly how sophisticated it is. It's sophisticated relative to the juvenile model. It's a lot better than what we used to have. But it's even with the rational model, I would maintain that our knowledge of investing is at a beginner's level. We still have a long ways to go. But in between the juvenile model and the quote-unquote sophisticated model is this passive model that gets it half right and therefore is half sophisticated, but also gets it half totally wrong and is therefore half juvenile. And unfortunately, the combination is poison. The passive investing model is actually the worst of all possibilities because it's just right enough to sucker a lot of people in and to cause people to put a lot of money in stocks at times when they are most dangerous of all. So the juvenile model was not a good model, but it wasn't terribly enticing. So most middle-class people knew to be careful with their money during the dominance of the juvenile model. And the rational model is a good model, appears to work for, you know, as far as we know. You know, we need to explore it more, but the indications are certainly good from the first 7 years of discussions. And then you have the passive model, which cannot work. The logical impossibility that it could ever work, and has already caused the biggest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States, and in my expectation is going to cause much more financial misery before it's put out of misery itself, as I hope will happen in coming days. Now, in order to understand why we need to make this movement, first to passive, first from the juvenile model to the passive model, and then ultimately to the rational model, which is what I view as state of the art today, you have to understand why the economic factors don't matter. I think this is the hardest thing for investors to understand because it's so counterintuitive. Now, look at the title of the podcast. Only valuations matter. What a bold statement I have made. Only valuations matter. It's almost insanely bold. How can anybody say such a thing? If you were to look at all the articles generated on investing every day on the internet, the numbers in the thousands, I bet you 80 to 90% of them deal with some aspect of investing other than valuations. And I'm saying only valuations matter. saying none of those articles matter. This is frankly, I think, one of the reasons why we've seen hostility to the rational investing idea and to the valuation-informed indexing strategy. Because without meaning any malice, I certainly don't mean to make people feel bad when I say that these other things that they're focusing don't matter, but I am saying they don't matter. I have to say what I believe, and that's what I believe. And people find that threatening. People who have spent years studying these things other than valuations are threatened by the idea that they don't matter. But that is truly what I believe. Now, how could I say such a thing? So let's take an example, the Alan Greenspan speech, where, you know, Melissa went running out of the, obviously somebody thought it mattered, or she wouldn't have gone running out of the room, and she wouldn't have, you know, came to the hearing in sneakers, and she wouldn't have somebody reserving a phone booth for her, and they wouldn't be paying her a big salary, fairly big salary, and people wouldn't be paying, you know, $10,000 or whatever it is they paid a year for this service. This isn't around today, I don't think. This was an earlier day. Computers were not ubiquitous in that day. Late 1980s, early 1990s. Probably started in the late 1980s, the phenomenon I'm talking about. So people thought interest rates matter. Why don't they matter? Well, interest rates and all other economic factors appear to affect stock price, appear to be important to stock investing. What is a stock? We always talk about indexes here. Let's talk about the S&P index. You buy a share in the S&P index, you're essentially buying a share of the productivity of U.S. businesses. How could interest rates not matter? How could inflation not matter? How could a recession not matter? How could I possibly say only valuations matter? Well, the second part of the title of this podcast is I give the reason why none of these other things matter. And the reason I give is everything else is priced in. Okay? What does that mean? The reason why I say interest rates don't matter and inflation doesn't matter and recessions don't matter and unemployment doesn't matter isn't that in some ultimate sense they don't matter. They do matter. They of course affect stock returns. They affect the economy. Anything that affects the economy affects the profits of the businesses that comprise the economy. So these things matter. But they don't really matter to the person buying stocks. It's a little bit paradoxical, but if you think it through, I think you'll see it. All of these factors are priced in. See, when you buy your share of the S&P, you don't need to determine what's the inflation rate? Where's it going in the next 6 months? What's the unemployment rate? Where's that going? When's the recession? You don't have to worry about any of that stuff because it is priced in. And in this on this issue, I'm very much in tune with John Bogle and with the Bogleheads. The reason why they say you don't need to pay attention to any of this market noise is that it is priced in. This is what they mean when they talk about an efficient market. What they mean by efficient market is it efficiently incorporates data, information bits. And there are thousands of information bits that determine stock prices. And this market of ours is this wonderful mechanism that takes these thousands of information bits and incorporates them all into a price. So what's happening when you buy a share of the S&P index is you're buying all the information you ever need to know about interest rates, inflation, unemployployment, recessions. It's all factored in. You don't need to worry your pretty little head about it. Okay? Now, the people who were paying for Melissa's service, they were trying to get an edge. What they were trying to do is to find out, 20 minutes before everybody else and make a trade. And that's a dangerous game. And, you know, if you study stocks to the point they did, maybe you can get away with something like that. But it's real hard. And the point of the indexing revolution is you don't need to do that, and you probably shouldn't be doing that. It's a dangerous game. You don't have the resources to win that game, and so you shouldn't be playing it. And on that point, I'm in a 100% agreement with John Bogle and all his followers. I don't think you should be playing that game. But if you're not playing that game, then forget it. Don't read articles about it. Forget it. Doesn't matter. But where Bogle misses the boat is that Bogle tunes all that out. But unfortunately, and I don't fault the man. I think he made a mistake. I don't think anyone's perfect, and he advanced our understanding of stock investing in a huge way. So, I don't think it's exactly right to be faulting him for having made a mistake. I do wish that he would come to terms with the mistake, which I think is evident at this point in the proceedings. It's 28 years that we've had research showing that valuations affect long-term returns, and if valuations affect long-term returns, valuations affect risk. It's the same thing. If the return is less at high valuations, the risk is more. And if the risk is more, your stock allocation should be changing. It should not be the same. Your stock allocation should be set based on the risk you're taking on. And Bogle acknowledges that. Bogle always tells investors to take risk into consideration in setting their allocation. So when he says you should stay with the same allocation at all valuation levels, he's saying something that contradicts his own statements, his own beliefs, because his belief is that risk should be factored in when choosing your allocation, and risk is ever-changing. Risk changes with every change in valuations. So when risk changes dramatically, you must change your stock allocation. If you truly believe, if you're a true Boglehead, so says Rob Bennett. Even though Bogle doesn't understand that, that does follow from what he says about how to set your stock allocation. So, the situation is you have two different factors that affect stock prices. You have one, let's call them economic effects. Inflation, recessions, unemployment, interest rates, all these sort of things. They don't matter because they're priced in. So if you're a day trader, you need to worry about them. But if you're a typical middle-class investor, you don't need to worry about them. They're priced in. They're taken care of. You can forget about it, all those factors. But Bogle's mistake was to think that covered everything. But there is another group of factors, or it's really one factor, the valuation factor, which is unlike any of those other factors. It's unlike the economic factors. And the valuation factor, by definition, is not priced in. The valuation factor is not priced in. Therefore, you must pay attention to valuations. Therefore, valuations matter. Since valuation is the only factor not priced in, only valuations matter. Only valuations matter. Now, why do I say that valuations are not priced in? Well, as I say, that is so by definition. Think about the word overvaluation. Overvaluation. What does that word suggest? Doesn't it suggest that the valuation is wrong? The valuation is the price. The word, when you put over in front of it or under, are you not saying that the price is wrong? Is it possible for stocks to be overvalued and also to be properly priced? It's not. It's a logical impossibility. It's pure nonsense to say stocks are wildly overvalued today, but because of the efficient market, they are also priced exactly right. I point that out because you hear people talk that way every day. You know, I mention sometimes how since I've learned about rational investing and studied it, I've developed X-ray vision, and I can read articles and I see things in the articles that other people don't see. Well, I see this on an almost daily basis. You'll have someone who recommends passive investing saying, hey, stay at the same stock allocation at all times. And then they'll also, in another paragraph, they'll be talking about overvaluation. And I feel like taking them and shaking them and saying, how can you believe in passive investing, which says you don't change your stock allocation when prices change, and also believe in overvaluation? If you truly believe in passive investing, which is staying at the same stock allocation at all prices, then you have to believe that all prices are right. You can't believe in overvaluation. The concept of overvaluation contradicts the idea that stocks are priced properly. And if stocks are not priced properly, obviously you shouldn't be at the same stock allocation as when they are. You don't need an IQ of 140 to figure that one out. So people talk on a daily basis in contradictory ways. They make two statements that contradict each other. If you accept that overvaluation is possible, you are as good as accepting that passive investing cannot possibly work. Because if overvaluation is possible, there are times when stocks are not priced properly. And if stocks are not priced properly, you shouldn't be at the same allocation as you would be as when they were priced properly. Because obviously, if they're not priced properly, the risk is greater than if they are priced properly. No? That's why I call the new model rational investing. Rational investing, all that rational investing is it acknowledges the absurdity of passive investing and moves on to a model that makes sense. And it changes all the rules. It changes all the strategies when you do that. It changes your focus. You see, passive investors say that you should not care about the short-term noise. And they're right. But they're always drawn to it. And if you go to a discussion board where a lot of passive investors congregate, you will find them talking about interest rates and unemployment and recessions and inflation. All the same things that people talked about in the pre-Bogle era. Why are they always drawn to that? Because they are insecure in their investing decisions. They're making decisions based on a passive model. And something inside them, it's called common sense, is troubled that they're not changing their allocation in response to big price changes. And because they're troubled, they're always trying to reassure themselves. And so what they do is they look for all these developments in the news and try to make sense out of them and say, this explains why we had the big price drop, you know. So I don't, you know, it doesn't mean that my model's all wrong. You see, what happened in that price drop? Passive investors and rational investors have a totally different take, an opposite take on almost any issue that comes up. Passive investors and rational investors come to a different take, an opposite take. What passive say is, well, we don't really understand what happened, but it had something to do with the bankers. The bankers were really, really bad people, and they did something really, really bad. We can't figure out what, but it had to be really bad because stock market lost $9 trillion worth of wealth in a couple of months. So they must have did something really, really, really bad. Really, really, really bad. You know, there was a joke. Is his name John Stewart? I think that's his name, the comedian. And he had a joke about it. He was talking about the companies, you know, that hire these bankers that are paid, you know, these million-dollar salaries. And one of them was saying, oh, we have to pay big salaries to attract the best people. And he said, you don't get it. He said, you don't have any best people. Because he's working on a belief that the job of these bankers is to know, is to manage risk. And obviously they did a bad job. So how can you say they're best people? Well, the truth is they are best people at what they do. They're best people at looking at all of the economic factors that affect risk of loans. They don't look at the non-economic factors. They wouldn't know where to begin. Because our economic model, it's called the economic man model, only looks at rational factors, does not look at emotional factors. So all of the models that the bankers use and that the investing experts use look at logic. They assume rationality. They assume it. And the truth is, the people who are investing in the market and the people who are buying houses are humans, and humans are at both. They do have human reason. They also have emotion. And we've ignored the emotional side. And there's only one place that I know of where the emotional side is quantified, and that's in valuations. So the passive model kicks out valuations, and that's the only thing that matters. That's the only clue we have to when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition and when they don't. It's the only thing we've got, and it's been kicked out. So for example, you know, people will say, well, you know, how can I ignore what Greenspan's saying on interest rates? Well, you can ignore it because, as I say, it's priced in. Now, if the truth of the matter is, usually they will say, well, lower interest rates will cause, a jump in stock prices. If Greenspan's not around anymore, but when he was around, they'd say, oh, if Greenspan lowers rates, prices will go up. Lowering rates was considered a good thing. But half the time, he would lower rates and prices would go down. And a lot of your typical middle-class investors would be puzzled by this. And they'd say, wait a minute. All the papers said if he lowered rates, prices were going to go up. He lowered rates, they went down. Well, what's going on here? These people with common sense would ask this question. Now, the answer is, it may be that the market anticipated him lowering rates by 2 points, and he only lowered rates by 1 point. And so prices actually went down instead of up because the lowering did not match the anticipated lowering. See, you've got these convoluted games going on. This is why you're better to just tune all this stuff out. You can never work through all the convolutions, all the convoluted scenarios. You're never going to be able to figure it out. So I think the whole appeal of Bogle's approach is he gave a way for middle-class investors to invest in stocks without having to worry about all the crazy stuff. And that's what people love about passive investing. What's bad about it is it throws everything into the same box. It takes every factor and throws it in the box that for things that don't matter. And it's fine to put all the economic stuff in there because all the economic stuff is priced in and you really don't need to worry about it. But valuations ain't priced in. If overvaluation and undervaluation was priced in, there wouldn't be overvaluation and undervaluation. Okay? What would stock prices be? Let's just say that investors were 100% rational. 100% rational, not emotional. What would stock prices be? The answer is we would always be at fair value. Always. Because if investors were rational, every time prices got a little high, that of course brings the value proposition down. When prices go high, the return you obtain on stocks goes down. So what happens when the long-term return starts to go down? People sell. They don't want as high. They want a lower stock allocation. What happens when people sell? The price goes back down. What happens when the price goes back down? Overvaluation disappears. So markets are self-correcting in a rational world. In a rational world, there's no overvaluation doesn't exist. Undervaluation doesn't exist. But of course, we don't live in a rational world. We live in a world where stocks are purchased by humans. Humans are emotional. So in this world, stocks could be priced 3 times fair value as they were in January of 2000. The long-term value proposition can get so poor that the 10-year most likely return on stocks becomes a negative number, as it was at the top of the bubble. That makes no sense. Zero sense. Zero rational sense. It makes emotional sense. Ask investors in January of 2000, why were you lined up to buy stocks when the long-term value proposition was a negative? The long-term most likely return was a negative number? Emotion. Stocks have been going up for years, and so we all wanted to be part of this. We didn't care if the long-term value was negative. If anybody told us the long-term return was negative, we banned them from our discussion boards. We didn't want to hear it. It's 100% emotion. If you want to invest successfully, you have to take that factor into consideration. You don't want to put your life savings into stocks at a time when the most likely 10-year return is a negative number. No way, no how. So valuations is different from every other factor. It is there are perfectly legitimate arguments that can be made that no other factor matters because all other factors are priced in. That's Bogle's argument, and he's right. But Bogle is wrong in thinking that valuations are like all these other factors. Valuations must be considered. Valuations are not priced in by definition. You know, this question came up one time. I was at a discussion board, the Fire Board, at nofiboards.com. It's now defunct. And I had made the argument that William Bernstein had said valuations affect long-term returns as a matter of mathematical certainty. I've always believed that that one sentence proved beyond any reasonable doubt that passive investing cannot work, because William Bernstein is an advocate of passive investing, and if an advocate of passive investing is saying that valuations affect long-term returns, which implicitly means passive could never work, you know, if one of its biggest advocates acknowledges that, how could anyone believe in passive? I've always believed that, and if you go back in the post archives, you'll see that I quoted Bernstein on that point thousands of times. Well, one time I was doing it, and somebody jumped in. I don't remember his name. And he jumped in and he said, in order to take valuations into consideration in setting your stock allocation, you would have to know the intrinsic value of stocks. And I said, well, yes, that does follow. It seems to me. That's a good point. He'd say, you can't know the intrinsic value of stocks. And I'd say, huh? What do you mean you can't? He'd say, well, you can. He said, look, you're quoting Bernstein. Here's another quote from Bernstein. And he showed me the page, and lo and behold, he was right. Bernstein says in the book, you can never know the intrinsic value of stocks. If you can't know the intrinsic value, how can you know whether stocks are overvalued or undervalued? When I say that stocks are 3 times fair value, what I'm saying is there's an intrinsic value, which is the true value, and the current price is 3 times as high as that. Intrinsic value is a P/10 level of 14. And at the top of the bubble, it was 44. It's 3 times. But Bernstein, the same guy who says valuations affect long-term returns, also says you can never know the intrinsic value. This is the problem we're struggling with today. This is why we have an economic crisis today. Because the experts, and Bernstein is an expert, tell us that valuations matter. They affect long-term returns, which is what we all want to, you know how to get, right? But on the other hand, they say it don't matter because we don't know what the intrinsic value is. If you don't know the intrinsic value, there can't be such a thing as overvaluation. Well, I say there is such a thing as overvaluation. That's the rational model. You know, this contradiction, passive resolves it by ignoring valuations and just pretending they don't exist. Rationals resolve it by acknowledging that valuations matter and that valuations exist, and then proceeding logically from that, following all the implications of that insight. So I say valuations matter, and obviously if stocks can be overvalued, there has to be an intrinsic value. The intrinsic value I define as a P/10 level of 14, roughly. I don't know precisely. But that's the best guess we can come up with the tools available to us today. that if you look at the historical record, stocks perform in an average way when they are priced at a P10 level of 14 or 15. They behave normally. When they're priced much higher than that, the long-term return drops dramatically. And when they're priced much lower than that, the long-term return increases dramatically. All right. So that's why I say that only valuations matter. Because the other stuff is priced in, but valuations is not priced in. The whole thing that makes valuations important is the way that a guy said this recently at Vanguard Diehards, PJ Crafter, and he's a passive investor, and he said, "Oh, passive works. Passive's wonderful, but it doesn't work when the market is corrupt. That's why passive's looking bad today. Market was corrupt." Well, he's sort of right, but what he's missing is we have a way of knowing when the market is corrupt. How do you know? You look at the valuation level. When stocks are priced at 3x fair value, that in itself is corruption. A functioning market, a non-corrupt market, prices stocks properly, rationally, fairly. When you're selling stocks at 3x what they're worth, that's called corruption. So PK Crafter is right that passive doesn't work when stocks are corrupt, but all he's doing is he's just saying, in other words, that passive doesn't work when stocks are overvalued, which, of course, is just what I say, what all rational investors say. What you need to know is, when is passive not going to work? And if when passive doesn't work, you change your allocation, well, you're a rational investor. You're not a passive investor anymore. You're a rational investor. Now, I'll give an example, and then I want to bring this home with some real-life examples. But an example of this came up in a discussion. I always remember it. This was at Vanguard Diehards, and John D. Craig, he's a friend of mine. He was a big supporter of mine at Vanguard Diehards, big believer that valuations matter. But there was a thread. I don't recall. I think he started it. I'm not sure. And the thread was, how would a terrorist attack affect stock prices? And what I presume that what John wanted to hear was, you know, some people were going to say, well, you know, they would temporarily go down, but they would jump right back up, which is more or less what happened after 9/11, or they'll go down permanently, or they won't be affected at all, whatever. Different people were giving different opinions. I came on and said, well, I can't answer your question, John, until you tell me what the valuation level is at the time this terrorist attack happens. And he got exasperated with me. He says, Rob, all you ever talk about is valuations. You know, what is wrong with you? You're annoying people. I said, John, look, everyone's here can post what they believe. You know, if you don't think valuations matter, say so, or if somebody else doesn't. But look at the title of the podcast, Only Valuations Matter. Naturally, I'm going to bring up valuations. That's what I think matters. I'm not serving the community if I don't say what I believe. Why would valuations make such a big difference in a terrorist attack? Because if say that the fair value P10 is 14. Say that stocks were priced at a P10 level of 7, half of fair value. And there's a terrorist attack. What's going to happen? Prices aren't going to go down. They're already down just about as low as they can go. They're not going to go down further. It's possible they would even go up. It's possible that if we had a terrorist attack when things were already so bad that people might look at that and say, you know what? Nothing worse can happen than this. And they'd start buying a little bit. You know, prices go up a little bit. But they can't hardly go down too much when they're already at 7. Now, what if they're at 44? Well, they're probably going to go down a whole big bunch. They might fall from 44 down to 7. That's a 5-6 drop. So what I want to know, when you tell me there's going to be a terrorist attack, I want to know what's the valuation level. That's where all the risk is. That's what matters to the investor. And that's who I'm writing to, the investor. Now, obviously, all kinds of things matter, you know, from a political standpoint. You know, how to solve the terrorism problem. But from the standpoint of the investor, all that matters is what happens to my investment. And the answer is, if there's a P10 level of 44, your investment is going to be destroyed. If there's a P10 level of 14, you're probably going to suffer a hit. But that hit will probably not be permanent. might be a 5 year, you know, for 5 years you'll be down, but you'll get out of it. If you're already at 7, you're probably not even going to have a hit. So valuations are the only thing that matter in that circumstance. Valuations is what you need to be focused on when considering what's going to happen in a terrorist attack or with a change in inflation or any of these other things. Valuations, only valuations matter because everything else is priced in. Valuations is the one thing that's not factored into the price. Why? Because by definition, overvaluation and undervaluation is a mispricing. So that can never be priced in. You can't price in a mispricing. It's impossible. Logically impossible. Now, I just want to give some down-home examples of how to apply this insight that only valuations matter. The reason why, there's four reasons why valuations matter. One, I have three. One, you have to pay attention to valuations because, well, there's four reasons why you have to pay attention to valuations. One is that they matter. They affect the long-term return. All the calculators at the site show that. All the historical data shows that. So you have to consider valuations because they matter. Two, valuations can only be affected by you. See, all these other things are affected by all kinds of people who are smarter than you. Or not in a general sense, but they're smarter than you on the particular problem. In other words, when the unemployment rate is bad, you know, there's economists that deal with that. There's politicians that deal with that. That's not your job to fix. But valuations can only be affected by the middle-class investor. Nobody else can do the job for us. We have to do it. So you have to consider valuations, one, because they affect the result. Two, because only you can do the job. Three, because they affect you personally. Valuations affect how much risk you're taking on with your investment. And that's a very personal thing. Because all of us have a different risk tolerance. So if you ignore valuations, you're allowing your risk level to go to places you had never intended it to be, places it should not be, inappropriate places for you. You're taking on either far too much risk or far too little if you fail to adjust for valuations. If you leave your allocation the same at all times, you're guaranteed that sooner or later, your stock allocation is going to be wildly wrong. If you invest passively, this is why I say passive can never work. If you invest passively, it is guaranteed that at some point in the future, your allocation will be either wildly too high or wildly too low. And that's obviously not a good thing. That's why I say passive can never work. And fourth, valuation should be considered because they're simple to understand. Some of these things are just too complex for the typical middle-class investor to figure out, but valuations aren't. You just look at a number. Valuation, the fair value P10 level is 14. Well, 28 is double. You know, is that hard to know that you don't want to be at the same stock allocation when the price is double fair value as you would be at fair value? 7 is half. Is it so hard to figure out you don't want to be at the same stock allocation when prices are half a fair value as you would be when they were fair value? Well, let's get to the down home examples. I just went to the dentist this morning to have my teeth cleaned. There's all kinds of things that go on when you go to the dentist, whether you're getting your teeth cleaned or you're getting a cavity filled. Do you have to get intimately involved in all those things? Do you have to learn what kind of drill the dentist has? Do you have to learn how to drill teeth? Do you have to learn, you know, how to work those things that take pictures, the x-rays? You don't have to learn any of that. It's none of your business, is it? It's the business of the dentist. Does that mean you don't need to look at anything that you can get your teeth taken care of passively? What would a passive approach to teeth care be? Passive approach would be you just walk down the street and the first place that has a signed dentist office, you walk in and you let the guy take care of your teeth. That's passive teeth cleaning, teeth care. That's dumb. Just as dumb as passive investing. You have a job when it comes to taking care of your teeth. Your job is to check the references of your dentist. Find out. When you go to a movie, do you need to know how to create the special effects that make the movie exciting? No. Sometimes when you get a DVD, they'll have this little extra, and it'll say, you know, the making of. It'll tell you how they did the special effects, and that's interesting information. It's nice to know. But you don't really need to know that to enjoy the movie. But you sure do have to do something. If you just randomly go to movies without checking any reviews, without asking your friends whether the movie's any good, you're going to end up at a lot of stinkers. You're going to waste a lot of Saturday nights watching crummy movies. Most of us don't do that. Most of us either ask our friends or read reviews. We try to find something out about the movie before going in. Why? That's the part that affects us. It's not our job to do the special effects, but it is our job to find out whether the people who did the special effects did the job properly. Well, it's not your job to worry about whether the market has priced in inflation and interest rates and recessions and unemployment. It is your job to check out whether those things were priced in properly or not. If stocks are at 3x fair value, the people who were incorporating those things fell asleep at the switch. And you need to lower your stock allocation. You need to protect your portfolio. So you have a job, but you can do that job by looking at valuations. Only valuations really matter to the middle-class investor. When you eat food, do you have to go out and kill the cow if you want a steak? No. There are people that do that for you, and they know how to do it a whole big bunch better than you would. But you do have a job, don't you? It's your job to eat a balanced diet. It's your job to eat not only steak, but, you know, dairy products and grains, and fruits and vegetables. Mix it up and get some exercise. You see, you can give up a part of the job to the quote-unquote experts, just like you give up part of the job in investing to the quote-unquote experts, just as John Bogle advises you. But you can't give it all up. You've got to do the responsible thing, and you've got to take the work they do and make that work effective for you. And they could you know, do a perfect job killing the livestock, and it's not going to help you if your diet is unbalanced. So you need to take their work and make fruitful use of it. And in the stock area, that means checking the valuation and changing your allocation accordingly. You can let the fund managers work out all the technical details, but you need to pay attention to the big picture item, which is, are stocks priced reasonably or are they not? Do you need to make hiring and firing decisions at your company? No. There's management people that do that. But if you notice that the management has changed and the hiring and firing decisions are not good decisions, don't you have a responsibility to start looking around for another employer? If you see that the company is making bad decisions, you can't jump in and do it for them any more than you can jump in and figure out how to incorporate, what Greenspan says about interest rates. But what you can do is lessen your involvement. If you were at an 80% stock allocation when decisions were being made effectively and stocks were priced fairly, now when they're at double or triple fair value, maybe you want to cut back to a 20% allocation. Just as at your job, your loyalty to that job, your connection to that job, your commitment to that job is going to diminish. Not if you see one case. If you see one case of a person fired improperly, you're not going to draw grand conclusions. But if you see 10 people, 10 great workers being fired and 10 incompetents being brought in to replace them, that tells you something. And if you're a responsible person, you're going to change your behavior about your job in response. You're either going to start taking night classes to prepare yourself for a new career, or you're going to start shopping around for a different employer. If you have any sense, you're not going to be a passive employee, because that way lies doom, just as that way lies doom in the investing realm. Do you pick your kids' friends for them? Do you follow your kids around and tell them, this one likes such and such, make friends with him. You have to let your kids grow up and pick their own friends. But if you see your kids involved with drug dealers, are you not going to step in? and veto those choices? It's another case where you don't need to micromanage. You don't need to know all the details. But you can't give up your responsibility for the fundamentals. There are times when you just have to step in. And when stocks are priced to 3x fair value, that's a time when you have to step in. That's why. It's the lesson. It's the hundreds of millions of dollars that were devoted to marketing the passive concept that caused the out-of-control bull of the 90s and the huge stock crash of 2008 and the economic crisis that resulted from it. Because we all were irresponsible. We all left everything to the kids. And our kids started hanging around with drug dealers, and we said, hey, it worked out before. You know, I let them pick their friends before. I'm not going to get involved. Not my concern. When your kids get involved with drug dealers, you have to step in. When the investment class, you've got your retirement money invested in, it starts taking up with drug dealers, you have to step in. And when prices go to 3x fair value, that's the equivalent of taking up with drug dealers. That's dangerous, dangerous, dangerous stuff. And the so-called experts who told us otherwise do not know what they are talking about, so says Rob Bennett. When they tell us to ignore valuations, when they tell us we don't need to change our stock allocations, when prices go to insane levels, when they tell us to invest passively, they show that at least on that question, which is the most important question there is, only valuations matter, and they got that one wrong, they show us that on that question, they don't know what they're talking about. That's my sincere take. Do you write the tax laws? No. You trust experts to do that, don't you? Just as you quite properly can trust experts to determine how to factor in all the economic factors that affect stock prices. But can you count on the experts to figure out what deductions you should claim on your stock return? No. That's your business. That's your job. That's where you come into play. That's how valuations are different from every other factor that affects stock investing. Valuations is the factor that you have to take into consideration. You have to look at how much the risk of investing in stocks has changed as a result of valuation changes and how much you should change your stock allocation in response. And if you invest passively, you fail to do that. When you make a decision to become a passive investor, you have made a decision to invest irresponsibly, recklessly, foolishly. And I hope that we're all going to change. I hope we're going to move. I hope we're not going to go back to the juvenile model. But I hope we're going to move past the passive model into the model that actually stands a good chance of working in the real world, the rational model. The model where, yes, we agree with John Bogle that we don't need to be involved in all this nitty-gritty. That's why we love passive investing. That it takes us out of all the nonsense. But in the future, I hope we're going to do it responsibly. Never again are we going to buy into this idea that there's no need to change your stock allocation when prices go to truly insane levels. We're going to throw passive investing overboard, I hope, and replace it with something that makes sense in the real world, rational investing, an investing model in which we do take valuations into account, an investing model in which we acknowledge that only valuations matter because everything else is priced in, but overvaluation and undervaluation are not priced in. It's examining overvaluation and undervaluation and adjusting our stock allocations accordingly that is left to us, the individual middle-class stock investor. If you have some thoughts, I hope you'll send them my way. Check for the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the website, passionsaving.com. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.